It's time to get brutally honest.
Ray, if you were single right now, would you be on Tinder?
Probably.
You horny little devil, you.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
All right, big hour coming up. Darcy Tucker will join us in about 5 minutes. We don't get the chance to catch up with him very often. He's going to be at the Memorial Cup this weekend. Three-time Memorial Cup champion. So he'll join us in about 5 minutes. The GM of the Jays, Ross Atkins, at 5:30. Jays off tonight, back in action tomorrow. Texas is in town, who everyone hates. The Jays have beef with so many teams. Sometimes it can be difficult to keep track. Like, maybe Atlanta's the team that they hate the most now. Baltimore would be on a short list. But Texas, I have a feeling this weekend could be a lot of fun. And they need some wins. And Ross Atkins came out yesterday and said he's still optimistic that they can be a playoff team, but they've got to go on a run soon. So we'll get him to define what that means. What is a run in the eyes of Ross Atkins?
I'm thinking it's going to be a pretty significant one.
Well, they've got Texas, Cincinnati, and then a four-game series with the Yankees at the back end of this 10-game homestand.
Last year, the Jays made hay in their division over the Yankees by beating them continuously.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your chance again. The Yankees now are at the top of the division, so you know you can try to do the same thing that got you the division last year.
That's who you're chasing.
Yep.
You know who you're chasing. The Yankees have been very impressive. I think they'll continue to be a pretty good team. I think Boston, I'm not sure they're going to get it together. I'm not sure they're going to get it back together. David Price had another rehab start, I believe, today. It got really ugly. I'm not sure Price is ever really going to get back to 100% this year. But Donaldson and Tulowitzki back as of tomorrow night. Liriano and Happ appear to be on their way, but Sanchez is still the big dog who doesn't sound like he's coming back anytime soon. So we'll get you an update on that as well from Ross.
Quick question. If Darcy Tucker was a baseball player, would he be Dustin Pedroia or Lenny Dykstra?
Lots of similarities there. Pedroia, like, smaller guy, gritty, leader type. Dykstra went off the deep end, though, once he got beyond his career.
Yeah, and I'm talking as a baseball player.
Have you been tracking old Lenny and what he's been doing?
I'm talking as a baseball player, only as a baseball player.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I'd probably have to go with Pedroia,
kind of
I remember a little bit more.
A hybrid between the two?
Yeah.
We should try to get Lenny Dykstra on. I don't know if it would be comfortable. Like, I don't know if we would be able to guarantee that he won't say anything completely X-rated and offside.
I used to use one of Lenny Dykstra's lines. If somebody was talking about an athlete, and he just said, you know what, I'm not an athlete, I'm a baseball player. I was like, I like that.
What does that even mean?
That's just what he said. He goes, I'm just a baseball player.
Mitch Marner yesterday on Leafs Lunch was talking about training. He goes, do you know how you train as a hockey? You got to play hockey. He goes, you got to play hockey to be a good hockey player. It was really interesting to hear him say that.
So what, he's going to keep playing all summer? That's like his plan?
Well, no, but he just said, like, you can do a lot of other things to train, but if you're not playing hockey, you're not training for hockey. You got to get out there and play.
Well, Phil Kessel has a different idea. Because Phil, during the summers, as we know, he doesn't skate.
10 times.
And that was very liberal. You know he wasn't on the ice 10 times.
Remember that training camp? What a circus.
That was when the Feschuk piece broke that morning. We were down at the MasterCard Center. That was the strangest day in maybe in radio history in this city. Where we, at least for our show anyway, we were doing the lunch at that point, and we went down to the MasterCard Center day one. And Feschuk's piece broke that morning of what Steve Spott had been saying at some school about Carlisle and how he feels about Phil and the organization and Phil and everything, man. It was just, it was a bombshell of a piece. And day one of camp. I think that was Shanahan's first official day on the job. It was. He had been hired the previous April. That was like his first official, okay, the guys are back on the ice.
It was his first day on the job at training camp.
That's a learning curve.
Poof.
Isn't that a learning curve? And I would suggest that he learned a lot from that. Not in terms of controlling the media, because I think he understood at that time you can't do that, but you've got to tell your people they cannot say anything at any point. Like, could you imagine DJ Smith going public, like at some camp, and being like, oh, Matthews, you know, he actually dogs at a lot. He parties. And that went public. How quickly that got.
If I'm a president or GM, I'm firing. I'm sorry. To me, that's a fireable offense.
Well, Spot survived the year, but then that was it. But now he's moved on. He's in San Jose, and he's doing great. So,
do you think when Brendan saw that come out, he started to think, who is the GM that nothing will get out and will absolutely tell everybody, if it does get out, to Jeff's point, you're fired?
Do you think that was the day?
Yeah, he did find him. I'm just wondering if the thought went into his head that day.
Yeah. It's a good question. Was that the day Lamoriello
came into his mind?
Mm-hmm. We got your boy on the line.
We got a gee.
And Darcy Tucker is going to be in Windsor this weekend at the MasterCard Memorial Cup, May 28th, to meet with fans and attend the championship game with a lucky contest winner and two of their friends for the hashtag Be a Challenger campaign. And he's got three Memorial Cups. Would you say it's the best junior team of all time, that Kamloops team?
Well, I guess so.
I'll bet you that's what he's probably going to say.
Well, I mean, he was on three or four years there. They win the Memorial Cup. I'd say, yeah.
All right, let's bring him in here.
And I watch those teams play lots.
We'll put him on the spot. Darcy, would you say that is the greatest junior team of all time?
It's pretty hard to say it's not the best junior team of all time. I think when you look at it from the standpoint of guys that played in the National Hockey League, there's been other teams that have had good players that have gone on to play in the National Hockey League, but that team's crazy. Our number one line was myself, Jerome McGinley, and Shane Doan that last year, and it was just so easy to play with two big horses like that on your wing.
Hey, how about the one year when you lost the first two games at home and you had to go all the way to Brandon, and then you just took it right to them?
Yeah, you want the story of that, don't you? So we lost the first two games. We outshot them 50-14 and 50-16 in the first two games at home. We hadn't lost back-to-back games in that building from the time it opened until that present time. And so Don Hay told us to go get a bag lunch and get on the bus, and we took that bus 22 straight hours to Brandon, and he said, figure it out back there, boys. And we won the next three games and then won game six at home in overtime to win the whole WHL that year.
So 44 hours collectively on the bus over the course of what, like 4 or 5 days?
That's what Western League guys do. They tell you how long the bus drives.
Well, we went 22 hours straight that time. We talked it out at the back of the bus. I remember being at the back of the bus and thinking to myself, boys, we got to figure this out. We got to figure out a way to win three games here in Brandon to win this series, and we did it. We had good leadership from the coach, the general manager, right through the players.
22-hour bussy. Like, oh, you've put yourself in that position, though. When you weren't flying, you would do stupid things like that all the time.
Yeah, I can't imagine that, though. 22 to go to a hockey game? Thank you, God, for the OHL. I'll do 15 minutes to Kitchener from Guelph.
That's the best, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
With Darcy Tucker. So you're going to be down there this weekend. What's the plan?
Yeah, I'm down there with Collins Barrow. I became the accounting gee, as you guys would say today. I'm an accounting guy this weekend. We've got to be a challenger program, and we've challenged people to tell us your why this year. I was very fortunate to have good people around me and did the right things to play in the National Hockey League, but we got a lot of other people that we want to know what their why is to get to where they're going in life. So. And we're going to have a lot of fun. We're doing some charity down there. We're going to go to the Community Living Center in Windsor and spend some time there. And then some people who won the contest will get to watch the final game with me in the stands. That'll be a lot of fun. I always enjoy watching the final game of the Memorial Cup. A lot of high energy, a lot of intensity in that game.
Well, and especially if Windsor's in the final. I mean, they are, exactly. And if they play Erie, then it's over. I mean, wouldn't you suggest like that would be just an epic atmosphere with two Western Conference OHL teams going at it? When you were in Kamloops, I mean, did you guys ever host? Did you ever play at home in a Memorial Cup?
Yeah, my last junior game was in Kamloops. We hosted the final Memorial Cup that I was in. Even though we had won the WHL that year, we actually were the host team. And to play that final game at home, basically it was over in the first period. We scored 5 goals in the first period beating Detroit just because of our home crowd. It had nothing to do with anything else. Both teams are really good hockey clubs. Paul Maurice is the coach of that Detroit team, and We were taken on by the fans. The fans just carried us in that final game, and we ended up winning an 8-3. And what a way to go in your final junior game, winning at home.
You know, I wanted to ask you, just, you know, you joined the Kamloops Blazers after they'd had a whole lot of success and you know, fell short a couple of times in the Memorial Cup. And you know, we hear all this talk about, you know, the narrative around the team. Did you, you know, as you, all the success at Kamloops, did you feel as you came in there, that young group of players, you know, that won, did you feel like that was defining Kamloops as somebody that couldn't win the big one?
Yeah, and there was a lot of talk about that when we went into the first one we won in Seattle. There was a lot of talk about that. And I think that team, out of the three teams that won the Memorial Cup, that was probably the team that was not as skilled and not as good as the other two teams. We just had good character. We had good people that did the right things. And the coaching staff had a calm attitude towards that. And Zach Boyer scored the goal with 14.6 seconds left. And if Zach doesn't score that goal there, I find it hard that we would win the next two. He taught us how to win that group by scoring that goal. It's just, once you win once, it seems like it snowballs from there.
We're chatting with Darcy Tucker. He's going to be down there in Windsor this weekend at the MasterCard Memorial Cup as a big part of the hashtag Be a Challenger campaign with Collins Barrow. He's working in conjunction with Collins Barrow. So I got to ask you, O-Dog doesn't want me to throw it at you, but I'm sure you've been listening and I'm sure you've heard. He's like a big Sens booster now. He's been to Ottawa for a couple of games, and I think he's outright cheering for them to win tonight. As a former Leaf, and obviously your history with Leafs Ottawa, how do you feel about your boy jumping on their bandwagon?
I think it's great. I've been cheering Elfie on up there in the press box the whole time.
Come on. Just carve him, please.
I can't. Actually, you know what? I think the way they're playing is outstanding. Like, I look at that Ottawa team, and everybody talks about the 1-3-1 and their style of play. You can still find offense playing a defensive system, and they're going to have to find a way to do it in Pittsburgh tonight to win the series. But at the end of the day, I like the 1-3-1 system. It's if you play it the right way and you stay within it, you can still get lots of good offense out of it. And they're a pesky group, and they're feisty, and they're in your face, and they found ways to win. And that's, you got to love a team like that.
You see that? He's a Sens fan, too. We got a Guy who's a Sens fan.
We do have a Guy who's a Sens fan.
I guess, man. Leaf fans would be shocked by that because, like, I think the image of the late 90s, early 2000s was you jumping into the bench. I mean, Leaf Sens, who were you chasing? Was it Chris Neal? Who were you going in?
Yeah, I was going after Chris Neal. Something happened with Travis Green down in the corner, and he pointed at somebody at the bench, and I just assumed it was Chris Neal, so I went in there and I still got Barney Rubbles on the top of my head from that stupidity.
No kidding, man. You don't see that much anymore. When guys get hit into the bench, everyone just kind of leaves them alone.
I was laughing the other night with Crosby standing by the bench. He's getting poked by Mathot, and he's getting water bottle sprayed by Hoffman. It was quite interesting. If I'd have done that water bottle spray when I was in the league, they'd have given me a fine for sure.
No kidding. Yeah, you guys were targeted, I would say. Did you feel that way? Like, you guys had that kind of vibe to you?
Well, it didn't help that Pat started yelling at the referee from the drop of the puck at the opening faceoff about something that happened 25 games before that. So,
25 years.
Exactly. So, but we had a pretty pesky group and a lot of in-your-face sort of guys. So, of course, we're going to be targeted.
Well, what was one of your favorite Pat Quinn yelling at the refs lines like 2 seconds into the game?
That I can repeat on air. I can't repeat my favorite, but Pat always seemed to have something up his sleeve for the referee. I remember one guy who was a linesman skated by, I'm not going to name who it was, skated by our bench, and Pat just looked at him and said, "Not you again." And our whole bench started laughing.
It's a linesman, too. What's he going to do, scream on an offside call? That's unreal.
Pat blames the linesman for not having a Stanley Cup ring because of he said the offside when he was in Philadelphia when the Islanders scored that goal was offside. So Pat blames the linesman for a lot of things.
Yeah. That's going way back,
1980,
too.
Oh, yeah. Pat never, yep. He said that was offside.
Yeah.
I think he was on the whenever that linesman showed up. I think it was Leon Stickle. And whenever he showed up with Pat was coaching, Pat would get on him.
That's
outstanding. Oh, yeah, rain on him. Yeah.
That's outstanding. 20 years later, you screwed me. Well, we're looking forward to seeing how it all plays out this weekend. Enjoy it down there in Windsor. Thanks for doing this, as always.
Appreciate it, guys. Great chatting.
There he is, Darcy Tucker, friend of the show, one of our favorites.
And Sens fan.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, he said he likes the style, like, because of the way they're playing. And
I would bet, too, that Darcy, being from Alberta, he's probably got on a bull.
Oh, for sure. Maybe we should ask him about that.
Maybe the training bulls, but not the real bulls. He doesn't get on those mechanical things where they can, you know, tone it down to 5 kilometers an hour.
Right. And you can survive, in other words. Why didn't you ride the bull after when did you ride it?
I didn't have time. We had a bunch of stuff to do for SportsCenter. That's hockey. SportsCenter, again, just didn't have time. The last thing I wanted to do would rush out there, jump on the bull, probably rip the ass out of my pants, and then have to run in and be sweating for a bull ride.
See, I think the fans should have been chanting by the set there, which have bull, bull, mm-hmm. bull. Make them go out there.
Right. Like the Roman Colosseum.
Yeah.
Just yell at you all game until you go out there and do it again.
And then I just yell, "Are you entertained?"
Maximus O'Neill.
And there's a seamstress there just in case he does blow the seat out of his pants.
Might need a tailor if it just follows you around. Sorry, I think your ass is going to blow out. Let me get in there and help.
Just use the trainers for the Sens, could fix them up.
Yeah, I'm sure they could. I think Jerry will be in the building tonight. Think he'll be in Pitt?
I would say
him
no.
Or Bill does. Bill will be there, wouldn't he?
With handing out the trophy?
Or does Jerry hand out the East?
No. Jerry hands out the
It's only one
the
cup.
Big one, yeah.
There's only one cup. Doesn't want to spoil that moment.
No.
Well, someone's joining Nashville as of tonight. Hopefully it's a fun game. Like, I don't have a dog in the fight. I really don't care. I would like an entertaining game. I understand why Clark MacArthur and the Sens are saying what they're saying. Let's bore them out of the rink. Their objective is to do whatever they have to win.
Did they bore them out of the rink the other night when they just sat back and let Pittsburgh just shoot at will on Craig Anderson?
It was a thoroughly entertaining game because Pittsburgh was basically it was almost as if they were on a power play the whole game.
Well, that's what I mean. Guy Boucher talks about we can't run and gun with them after game 5. What does he call game 6? We'll just sit back here and we'll hope that our goaltender stands on his head. And who picked the Stars for game 6? How was Craig Anderson the third?
Oh, no, somebody was just high.
No kidding.
I mean, what were you watching? Yeah, I know you won. Don't get me wrong here. I'm never going to demean a win. But if they think that's the recipe carrying forward.
I think they gave Mike Hoffman the first star.
They did because he had the game winner. Bobby Ryan was the second star.
And Craig Anderson was the only star.
He was.
Well, not the only star.
They
should have
went Guy Lafleur on that one and gave him all 3.
Yeah, he was that brilliant.
Yeah.
He was great.
Guy Lafleur. Right. Everything's got to be reversed.
Yeah.
Because you know the tap man and Jim Taddy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
oh,
guy,
yeah.
No guy. We've found a way to circumvent that so there aren't any patent issues and he can't bother us anymore.
No gee.
We gee, non gee.
We gee, non gee.
I like it, man.
Love it.
I'm a big fan. I think we're going to have to use
that one more time.
Wee-gee, non-gee.
All right.
We're going to have a little segment of wee-gee, non-gee later in the show.
Yeah, we'll get to this later.
Do we get any type of benefits by using both languages?
That's a good point. Maybe we should get all like the Quebec holidays and all that kind of stuff. Which is weird. Like, what Quebec?
Quebec holidays.
I know they do things different or whatever. But this year, like, we got an email recently because Bell, a national holiday, July 1st falls on a Saturday this year. So Quebec is going to have their holiday on the Friday, and the rest of the country is on the Monday. Like, why would Quebec want the Friday when the rest of the country is on the Monday? Or why do they get to choose that? I don't get that.
Well, they have Saint Jean Baptiste the week before, too, which is a holiday in Quebec. So maybe they've just taken Saint Jean Baptiste the previous Friday, and then they just said, well, you know, why take off Monday and
I guess
Friday? I don't know.
But who gets to vote on that? Like, what if Ontarians, I guess we're called Ontarians. What if we want the Friday? Can we vote on that?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Why didn't we get a vote?
What does the Constitution say?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Take the Friday anyway.
The Friday-Monday routine, the 4-day-long weekend. Now, that
is gorgeous.
Is living. All right, Ross Atkins is going to join us, GM of the Jays, in about 10 minutes. Donaldson and Tulowitzki returning to the lineup tomorrow night. 10-game homestand starting tomorrow. Texas for 3, the Yankees for 4 at the back end of it. And Atkins yesterday saying he's still optimistic. Now, I think he's got to say that to his players. He's got to make sure they feel like they're still in it and they have support from management. If he came out yesterday and said, I got to be honest, if I could trade Donaldson today, I would do it.
Timing of the homestand, you might want to throw that one out there too.
Exactly. Come on out, tickets, ownership will love that. Absolutely. And listen, there are fans, the majority of fans are optimistic and they want to believe. Why would you not want to believe? If you're a Blue Jay fan, why do you not want to believe that they can get this together and get back on track? What is possibly there to lose in terms of them winning a bunch of games and getting back into the race?
There's nothing. There's no evidence there that says they can't. And obviously with Donaldson and Tulowitzki coming back, that's really important. And hey, listen, I say 7-3. They got to be 7-3 at the end of this 10-game homestand.
I think you're probably right. I think that would be considered
for it to be meaningful.
Yep. And then you walk away and you're like, okay, we keep chipping away
that's
here,
right.
And we got a lot of games, and we're almost back to 500. And if you can get 3 out of the Yankees, that's huge too, because that's one of the few teams that you're chasing. But he knows they've got to go on a run soon. He said that yesterday. So we'll get him to define how he would describe a run. What is a run in the eyes of Ross Atkins? GM of the Jays in about 10 minutes. Bob McKenzie in studio at 620. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. All right, Ross Atkins, GM of the Jays, will join us here in a moment. Jays off today, but they're back in action at home tomorrow. Donaldson and Tulowitzki back in the lineup. We'll ask him how delicate have they been taking this Donaldson situation, re-aggravating the same injury earlier in the season. How confident are they that this is it? Like, he's back, he's good to go, and we'll get you an update on Sanchez.
Now that I talk about sports every day for a living, I think now that if I was ever in a position like Craig's or a head coach, I would have a policy for injuries. Whenever you think you're 100%, I want you to take another 3 or 4 days. Like, I'm just tired of seeing guys coming back from injury too soon.
It's tough when you're 21 or 26.
I understand that, and I know that you got to get back out there, and it's all about winning, but you got to get it right.
I think that's the most important thing, get it right. Because if you come back and you're hurt again, I understand, but now you're just setting yourself back further.
I think if it happens a third time, too, the team will start getting blamed a bit. Like, I think they already took a lot of heat earlier because even Gibbons kind of intimated, yeah, we rushed him back, mm-hmm. and he started he was a pinch hitter one night, and then he was a DH, and then finally got out there, and before you knew it, boom, he blew his calf out again. If it happens a third time, I think the onus is still on the player who wants to play, and he's the one that knows his body, and fluky things can happen. But if it happens a third time, especially a guy of that prominence, at some point the spotlight's going to be on the team.
Yeah,
what happened here? What's with the rehab? What are the trainers doing? How did we get to this point again?
Well, and it might not be the trainers. It might be that you weren't patient. You didn't let it heal fully, to Jeff's point. And I get it. You know, you got good players. You want to get them back in the lineup, and you're thinking, like, okay, him at 90% is better than his replacement over here by a significant margin. Doesn't matter if he's not hurt. But and players do want to get in there and play, and when they do get in there, they're wired to give their all. So Donaldson's even DHing, pinch hitting, whatever he's doing, he's in it to be at his very best. That's what makes him a great player.
Right. And he's always playing for that next big contract, yeah. Like every other superstar player. Every player, period. But he's waiting for a monster deal. And every stat counts, every number counts. Talk to Bautista, man. You have an injury-riddled year, it can really hurt you. Teams hold it against you. It's a business in the end. It's never personal. But come the offseason, when we start talking dollars and cents, whatever the team can do to shave off some money, they're going to do. And they'll hold injuries against you. And say, look at, we're worried that you're over 30 now and maybe you're breaking down. I'm not sure we can make that kind of a commitment. Can't give you the fifth year. Go 4. And I'm sure he understands that. I'm sure his agent knows that. I'm sure anyone in that situation would. And you know Bautista's dealing with the same thing because he's going to be looking for a new deal at the end of the year as well. He's either going to opt out or the team's going to opt out. It's one way or the other. So health has been a big thing for him. Like, shockingly, with all of these injuries, Bautista's been healthy. The guy who last year couldn't stay healthy. Now, all of a sudden, he's the guy who's just humming along, and he's starting to get hot again. And
started an Ironman streak.
Yes. Joey Bats. I mean, he's playing third base. We've got to ask Atkins about that, the third base experiment over the past week and a half.
I thought Rich Griffin the other day was really good. Then when he said that was more of a statement about how little faith they have in Coughlin to play to play third base.
Right.
But sometimes it's like, why him? It's not so much why him. It's we can't have the other guy. We don't feel as confident in the other guys.
Well, and Bautista played really well at third, actually. Yeah. He really held up well. He made a couple of really nice plays, didn't make a buffoon out of himself.
I want to ask Ross a question about that, about just playing third base and players' attention. But I'll wait till he comes on till I ask
him. All right. We got him coming up here. He's calling in right now. And, again, yesterday, if you missed it, he was speaking to the media and very optimistic still about the team. I think you have to be. It's still only May. You know, yeah, you're five games under 500, but the division hasn't taken off from you yet. The Yankees and the Orioles and the Red Sox are still kind of hovering around. Boston has not done what most people expected that they would. And now you've got reinforcements coming back. You've got Donaldson and Tulowitzki rejoining the team tomorrow night. Happ is starting to rehab. Liriano's rehabbing. Those guys appear to be closer to rejoining the rotation. And you haven't been at 100%.
And it's May 25th. Let's not forget that.
It's still only May. It's not going to be easy. They've dug themselves a big hole, yeah. And they're in probably the toughest and deepest division in baseball. But you look over the past couple of years, they've been in this position before.
And just quickly, they've done a pretty good job of digging themselves out to a certain extent. That's why this 10-game homestand is so important.
Big time. Off today, back in action tomorrow with Texas in town, a 10-game homestand, four against the Yankees at the back end of it. Let's bring in the GM of the Jays, Ross Atkins. Ross, we were just talking about your optimism. How do you remain so optimistic?
Thanks for having me on, Brian.
Absolutely.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, you know what, man? These guys have they've worked their tails off. It's one of the beautiful things about baseball is that we do it every day. You become a very tight-knit group almost regardless of success and failure. You have no choice. There's not much like it, maybe other than the military experience. And, you know, these guys have done it. The players and the staff have remained extremely confident. We've had some great stories from guys contributing that, you know, some unexpected, some we knew we would need to contribute. And, you know, probably the two best stories of the year are Justin Smoke and Kevin Pillar. So, you know, if those guys don't have, you know, combined 900 OPSs, I'm not so sure we're scoring enough runs to be where we are today. It's not where we want to be, but very optimistic given that we're going to be, you know, making some big roster changes in the coming week. So, you know, tomorrow we'll make two additions over the next week. Could be two or three more additions, and all very integral players to, you know, our success.
Craig just mentioned you guys digging yourselves out of it. What do you think you need to see going forward? What kind of run do you think will put you guys right where you think you need to be?
You know, whether that runs now or in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be consistent, steady play. And we, over the last 2 months, you know, certainly the first month, we lost a lot of very close games. We were in every game. We've been extremely competitive, never felt by any means that we were out of any game. By no means overmatched. The contrary, every day walking in knowing and feeling like we have a very good chance to win. So, you know, we need those close games to be landing on the W side more often than they did the first 2 months. We can't, you know, continue to play at a sub 500 clip. So, you know, that would be great if it started right now, where we're playing at a well over 500 clip. But over the course of the next 3-4 months, you know, we've got our work cut out for us. There's no doubt about it. It's going to have to be steady. It's going to have to be, you know, over the course of the entire season. And, you know, I think, you know, we're going to put ourselves in the best position to do that.
As we mentioned, you've got a four-game series at home coming up against the Yankees. How much of your focus is about chipping away at the teams that are atop the division? How much focus is on actually winning and winning a lot of games against the Yankees, the Orioles, and the Red Sox?
You know, you have to control what you can, and we will do what we can. So those games obviously have more value in the division, and we'll do what we can to set ourselves up, you know, from a durability standpoint, from a matchup standpoint, to favor us to the best of our ability in those matchups in division. However, having said that, you know, you have to balance that it's an entire season and every game matters. So, oftentimes, I think, you know, you can try to control too much, and next thing you know, you're getting guys out of a rhythm and a routine.
But, you know, fortunately, we have a veteran group that understands those challenges. We have also a starting rotation that wants to be in that fire. We have a great group of core leaders that embraces those challenges and wants to be in those positions for those big games. So, you know, that's first and foremost, but it's definitely something that we'll be paying attention to.
I wanted to ask you a question, and not specifically about Jose Bautista, but a player like him who's been a good hitter, is there anything when a player moves from the outfield to play third base, in his case, that helps him maybe be a little bit more attuned to hitting and maybe a little bit, not that you're not in the game, I don't want to suggest that, but, you know, you're a little bit closer to the action. Is there any in your history, Ross, where that can translate?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's the beautiful thing about sports. You know, I think oftentimes guys, things can fall to feel too routine and almost mundane and too easy. And I think with any new challenge, you get energy. So I think that spike of energy, it can also go the other way. There is certainly some risk to it where you could lose confidence because of a play not executed. But there is no doubt about it, with the two plays that Jose made in the infield that day, the energy boost that he got from that. And you just can't put a price on that, on confidence, on energy, on that, you know, shifting your mindset. And it's across all sports and across all, you know, professional levels, when it's all about attitude, confidence, and mindset. So when that does happen that way, it's certainly beneficial. You know, I don't think it's entirely our intent. It's part of Gibby's intent, but mostly it's trying to put the best lineup out there to help us win a game.
With Ross Atkins, GM of the Jays, won't be a problem as of tomorrow night. Presuming Donaldson steps right back in and is at third base. Obviously, his calf injury has been a big conversation starter in the city, dating back to the beginning of spring training when he first aggravated the injury. Then he came back and he re-aggravated it, and now he's been out of the lineup for quite some time. How delicate has this Donaldson process been, considering it's the same injury that's flared up and has been reoccurring since the beginning of spring training?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. It's not more delicate from a process standpoint. Our process will be the same. You know, it doesn't heighten the way we do our jobs or change the way we do our jobs. We focus on a process that we think will put him in the best position. We work with the player, regardless of who they are, to make those decisions to the best of our ability and include the player in the process. And ideally, the player is always driving their timelines, their recovery, when they're ready. And, you know, in most cases, in all the cases for us here, you always have to pull back the reins because players are so driven, so motivated, and want so badly to be out there. And we're fortunate to have that challenge with JD. So we have, in every case, been conservative, and things have happened that, you know, we didn't expect. So, we're fortunate to be in the position we are, that we're adding him now and our team's still in it. And, you know, I think that, soft tissue injuries are something that are across the game or across professional sport. And we're fortunate that that's all it is, and that we have Josh Donaldson to add to our team tomorrow.
So how does that logic apply with Aaron Sanchez, who has had, you know, similar issues, middle finger, throwing hand, not the exact same injury, but he's been on the DL three times, and we're not even 2 months into the season. And I believe he said earlier in the week, like, he will sit, he's not going to throw baseball for quite some time. Is that him saying, I'm taking charge here, I'm not throwing, I'm not coming back until I'm 100%, or were you guys the one to suggest, hey, take off for a while and we'll figure it out, because you've clearly got to get this figured out. It's such a big issue for him.
Well, you know, it's never as simple as, okay, do you want to push it or not? You know, there's complexities to every injury. There's, in Aaron's case, the difference in the blister, this one is actually a blood blister that's formed from a crack in the nail. The nail essentially was looking for a place to get blood out of his finger, formed a blood blister, and it happens to be where he releases his fastball, in a very different place from where he was getting the blister originally. So something that I think it would be hard for anyone to have controlled, and it's a part of procedures and any medical process, things evolve. So you know, back to your question of whether or not Aaron had made this decision or we made this decision, what I can tell you is we're on the same page. And when the player is driving it, we would prefer that.
Does it make you look back on last year's decision with the innings limits and making sure that you're on top of the amount of innings that he was pitching and he actually ended up skipping a start late in the season? Does it change the way you look back on that process, considering he's injured now, and by all accounts, it has nothing to do with the amount of innings that he pitched a year ago? What did you learn from that process that maybe has you changing your approach, if at all?
I mean, it's a good question because it's what we do. You know, that's the only way to get better, regardless of our result, is to look back, positive or negative. What did we learn from it? We learned a great deal over the last year in how to incorporate, you know, subjective, objective opinions, scouts' opinions, coaches' opinions, players' opinions, agents' opinions, information that is coming from whether it be as objective as TrackMan and the data of spin rates and velocity, or just slowing down video to find delivery differences, and you know how you weight all of that information accordingly is the challenge, because getting the information and gathering it, anyone can do, or any front office built with the right group can do. Now, weighting it appropriately is the hard part, and that's where you need the player. You need the player's honest feedback, and you know that establishing the trust and building the trust and explaining the rationale is where you can never do enough of it. That's what we've looked back and learned, is that you cannot be exhaustive enough as you're building a relationship and making a decision with a player. And what we've always done in my career, and John Gibbons aligns 100%, is we put the player's career at the forefront and then the team second. And that way we're thinking about, in our opinion, that we'll have the best outcome for both. So it's difficult to say, you know, exactly what is the takeaway from last year in Aaron Sanchez, other than it always comes down to communication and trust, and we're glad we have it with him.
With Ross Atkins, GM of the Jays, they're back in action tomorrow night, back home for the first time in a couple of weeks, and it'll be the first home game for Kevin Pillar since the incident down in Atlanta. Obviously, the team stepped in. You flew down the day of, and he was handed a 2-game suspension. How do you think he's handled the situation ever since it went public and ever since he received the suspension?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, it's an unfortunate situation. We were disappointed in Kevin. He was disappointed in himself. And, you know, we realize that we have the platform to make a difference and to make a difference in a positive way. And we took a step back that day. Having said that, his accountability was as good as it could possibly be. And it was immediate in terms of our interaction. So, you know, my interaction as soon as I was notified with him was, hey, how do we make this right? I made a big mistake and I want to correct it. So he, you know, that people are going to make mistakes. He owned it. And now he's looking not just with his words, but with his actions to make a difference and an impact. And he's gonna work to do that in a meaningful way.
You being in the leadership position with the Blue Jays, when you first heard the news of this, what did you feel was most important to take care of as far as the situation goes? What did you feel the thing you had to do was most important, the first thing?
Well, first and foremost is getting the entire story and making sure it was right and making sure that no one was speculating or reacting to something that wasn't fact. Then secondarily was our mutual accountability, not just Kevin's, but ours. What are we doing, or what can we do better so that doesn't happen again? How are we educating all of our minor league players? How are we educating our major league players? And what's in place to ensure it doesn't happen again?
Well, we always appreciate the insight and the honesty, and best of luck starting tomorrow night. Obviously, we'll keep tracking where this goes, and we'll bug you again down the road.
All right. Hey, anytime, guys. Thanks, Brian.
There he is, Ross Atkins.
Thanks, Ross.
GM of the Jays, and Kevin Pillar, first game back at the Rogers Center since that game in Atlanta.
That will be interesting.
I got a question for Jeff. Ross talked about, you know, the key is communication and trust with the player. When you had an injury, did you feel that you were, you know, that people were, I shouldn't, and I'm not trying to cast doubt on anybody. Did you feel that they were trying to get you back into the lineup as quick as possible, or did you feel that there was a
Paul Maurice was really good with that. He understood, like, I don't need you coming out there if you're not, if you can't contribute. But Peter Laviolette was a little bit different. I had a situation with him where he came in the training room and I had a torn labrum in my shoulder, and he's like, well, I have a torn labrum. And I go, yeah, you're the coach. Like, I have to go out there and actually play. I don't care if you have the same injury as me. You got to go out there and draw on a chalkboard. Like, I got to go out there and get my ass kicked right in. So that was the only situation where it was like, and when I first started, Craig, there was pressure from older guys. Like, Kevin Dineen was one of my best friends. He was like my older brother, my roommate. And he would always ask me, like, when are you coming back? Well, are you hurt? Are you injured? Because he would just, he was a warrior.
Right.
And it was one of those, I had some kind of weird hand injury where I couldn't even hold my stick. And that didn't really fly with him that much. He's like,
Well, he made the comment, like, they always try to put the career first and the team second. And I think if you work along that path, that everything works out.
I would say generally 98% of my career, that they would always, there was, like I said, a couple situations where it's like, why the hell aren't you coming back? Yeah. But 98%, I always believed that it was my health, my career, and the team.
And that should help the team. Ultimately, you want to be on that kind of a, you know, those kind of bearings and dealing with that kind of
relationship. You don't want the player to think they don't care about your livelihood.
Exactly, man. If a player feels like the team's out to get them or whatever, you're going to have big problems on your hands.
Well, I'm not even suggesting trying to get you, but more like, hey, we need you back. Get in there. Like, get ready.
Putting
to get
pressure
back
on you. Bob McKenzie in studio. Big news in terms of a couple of defensemen out of Anaheim that could have an effect on what happens with the expansion draft and the idea of maybe the Maple Leafs or other teams kicking tires on one of those big D out in Anaheim. We'll tell you about that. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Bob McKenzie in studio at 6:20. Craig's kicking around. The O-Dog will be back. Legacy night in the NHL and the NBA. LeBron with a chance to go to his 7th straight NBA Finals, and I expect it to happen. And Crosby with the chance to go to his 4th Cup Final and 2nd in a row. So we'll tee up Game 7 tonight in Pittsburgh. We'll tee up Game 5 tonight in Boston between the Celts and the Cavs. And Bob McKenzie will join us in studio. And big injury news out of Anaheim that could affect what the Maple Leafs are going to try to do over the next month. We'll tell you about that as well. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app.